from the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. We've got an amazing show for you guys later in the show. Anna Kasparian and Brett Ehrlich, we are going to do a lot of different segments with different hosts, as we often do on the Young Turks, and we cover a ton of stories, enormous amount of news, as you might imagine, in today's show. The latest fallout from the insane press conference that Donald Trump had last night. I'm looking forward to not saying that anymore soon, as I'm going to explain in a minute. And his entire business council has left the building, as I predicted yesterday. We'll tell you the details of that and the fallout and why that's so important. And then there's two stories on today's show that are just the best of the best. So one involves a crying Nazi. And the broader story related to that is how now these neo-Nazis and Klan members say they feel like they're a minority group that might be targeted by the police and think they should be protected. Oh, that's precious. I'm waiting for hashtag Nazi Lives Matter. Okay, so we'll get to that story in a second. You're gonna love that story. Those tears are going to be delicious. Okay, and then what does the alt-right really believe? Well, somebody did a study on it and asked them. That is also amazing. There's one part of that that I cannot wrap my head around. Even for all I know about it, I still can't believe it. So that's a little bit later in the program. But in this segment, I just want to do two things for you guys, which is also related to today's news, of course. So let's do it. Okay, we have now entered a moment of truth for all the people who supported Donald Trump, whether they're Republicans, conservatives, or whoever else they might be. Now, why is that? Of course, if you haven't been paying attention, there's this dramatic moment here in his presidency where we had this alt-right rally, this white nationalist rally in Charlottesville. They brought torches to defend the Confederacy and to protect white nationalism. And Donald Trump equivocated. Not only did they bring the torches, but they also, in a rally the next day and Saturday, also brought weapons and clubs and long guns and chanted things like "Jews will not replace us" and "Blood and Soil," which is a chant from the Nazi days. And Donald Trump waited 2 days to condemn them by name, and then again yesterday said no, both sides are at fault. He called the people protesting the Nazis, quote, "very, very violent." He never called the Nazis very, very violent, even though they ran someone over and murdered them and injured 19 people. Did I leave that part out? That somebody was killed by a Nazi on US soil, and he still had hesitancy in calling them out and said the other side was very, very violent. He even went as far as to say that there are, quote, "very fine people on the side of the people who organized the rally." So some very fine people among the Klan, the Nazi, and the white nationalist. Okay, so that's what he did. But look, we often in America talk about never again, and we study the Holocaust and what happened there, and we are very rightfully taught that that should never be allowed to happen again anywhere, and certainly not in the United States of America. And I guess I got to remind Trump supporters, we're the ones who defeated the Nazis. They were on the other side. We had a giant war, we beat them, and we liberated the people that they were persecuting. And how do you do never again? Well, you condemn it when it arises, and this is that moment. This is the moment of truth. So I know that he'd done many terrible things before. That's why we were opposed to him. He has targeted Muslims, said every Muslim should be banned from the country when he was running on the campaign trail, and then when he was president, instituted a travel ban that affected only Muslim countries. We know he went after Mexicans and Latinos. He went after gays in America, including their military service. He went after blacks with voter ID laws. Went after Obama specifically on birth certificate, let alone what he did with the Central Park Five, and the list goes on and on. He had targeted all those communities before. But you know, there was always one excuse after another. But no, you don't understand, it's not that we're against Mexicans, it's the illegals that are the problem. I'm not against all Muslims, it's just that Muslims are more dangerous. There was excuse after excuse after excuse. There is no more excuses. Now it's painfully clear. In a chant they had by a synagogue in Charlottesville as the neo-Nazis paraded around with guns outside the synagogue. They were chanting Sieg Heil. And he said there was very fine people on that side. No. It's become crystal clear who Donald Trump is. So in this moment of truth, if you don't condemn this, you got to think about who you are. Are you a political animal who doesn't even care about equivocating on Nazis and the Klan, just as long as your side wins? And what is that side? What side are you on? This isn't about tax cuts anymore. This isn't about what you do with Social Security or Medicare or healthcare. Are you saying that you agree with Donald Trump that both sides in Charlottesville were equally guilty, that the people protesting the Nazis had it coming? I mean, these are outrageous, unbelievable implications of his statements. So if you are, then okay, then that's fine. We're at the moment of truth. You raise your hand and you say, yeah, I'm on that side. And some folks right now are doing it. There's some anchors on Fox News saying they need to be defended. Confederate monuments need to be defended. And that there are fine people on that side. There are some senators who are equivocating among the Republicans. Or you're just afraid to call them out and you're a coward. That's okay. Raise your hand and say it. Say it loud and say it proud. Because if this isn't a moment of choosing, I don't know what is. So this is not a fringe player where you play political tricks and go, okay, well, that guy once said something and maybe I can connect him over to you. He's the president of the United States. If you don't check this, this is when things get out of control. Because afterwards, the Nazis said, he gave us the green light. Richard Spencer said, by not condemning us for 2 days, he showed us that he loves us all, referring to the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists. He said, anybody knows that by pretending to condemn us 2 days later, which he then basically withdrew the next day anyway, he said, anybody who isn't stupid got the message, he's on our side. Are you on that side? This is your moment to decide. Look, it's not that hard. And now, credit to a lot of Republicans who have done the right thing, whether it's Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, all of the Bush family, Mitt Romney. It said, look, here's Mitt Romney. Here's a quote. He said, no, not the same. One side is racist, bigoted, Nazi. The other opposes racism and bigotry. Morally different universes. See, that's crystal clear. So I still disagree with Mitt Romney on 100 other things. But this is not a hard decision to make. This is a very, very low bar. So if you're not condemning what President Trump said at this point, I think that you will be forever tainted. And not, you know, look, if you're a right winger, you consider me progressive and you don't particularly care for what I say. It's not about me, it's about history. It's about how you'll be judged. And look, if you think that's fine and you're ready for that, no problem at all. But I think that history will look back and go, boy, in that moment, you still stood by Trump and you backed his statements that there are very fine people on the neo-Nazi side. Wow. So that's your call to make. I can't make that for you. But I think right now, not only should there be universal condemnation on the Republican side, that's obvious. Every single Republican legislator in the country. I mean, they said all along, they've said for years, they've said for decades that they weren't racist, that they weren't white supremacists, they weren't white nationalists, they weren't any of those things. Well, if you're not going to stand up right now, when are you ever going to stand up? So that part should be done by every Republican in the country, and it's, like I said, a very low bar. But if you're in the Trump White House and you're still backing this guy, you still work for this guy. We saw General John Kelly hang his head yesterday during the press conference. There should be mass resignations. If you don't resign, that means you are still happy to work for Donald Trump after he's made these comments. And that's on you. I don't think history will look very kindly on it. All right. So let's see what happens and let's see if people do resign or not. Okay. Let's go to the next story. Okay. I want to make this official. I was one of the first to say that Donald Trump would win the Republican primaries. I said it 6 months before the primary voting began. on June of 2015, well before others could get themselves to believe it. So I tell you that because I don't let my personal opinions of Donald Trump affect my sense of whether he's going to win or lose. I thought he would win the Republican primary, and then later, as you guys saw, I thought there was a good chance that he could win the presidency. And when I warned that about that on ABC's This Week, the rest of the panel laughed, understandably so, given where the polls were at the time. But we talked about those warnings. So now, as I was one of the first to say that his reign would begin, I'm now ready to be among the first to say that his reign will end. Definitely. He's done. You could write it down in stone. He will not finish his first term. There's no way in the world he finishes 4 years. He's not capable of it. The country's sick of it. The people in power are sick of it. And yes, that is important. And I'm going to tell you exactly why he's going to be leaving. Now, as to how quickly that'll happen, so that is a much harder guess. Like I said, definitely not the whole 4 years. It could be as quickly as a week. It could be as long as 18 months. I would be surprised. Wow, I would be very surprised if he made it all the way to 18 months. From this day forward, my best guess is within 6 months. But like I said, it could be so much faster that you're going to be shocked by it, because we're at the bottom of the barrel. So let me explain. So now you guys know what he did recently. He said there was very fine people on the neo-Nazi side in Charlottesville. He blamed both sides for what happened. I just can't get past it. There's so many horrific moments from that rally, including an avowed Nazi running over 20 people, 19 injured, and Heather Heyer killed. A Nazi killing somebody on US ground should be easy enough to condemn, and he couldn't bring himself to do it for 2 days. You guys know all of that, right? But after that, and then the part that really sticks out from a story from today is that synagogue in Charlottesville, as they have armed Nazis parading in front of them, they couldn't get cops to show up, and they were scared. They were huddled together, and they thought, Alan Zimmerman from the Temple was quoted as saying, "I can't believe this is 2017 in America." They had to take the Torah and the Holocaust scroll out of the building to make sure that it didn't get damaged. America in 2017, and he was equivocating on that. It's beyond gross. It's not who we are. Okay. So, but beyond that, then one person, the CEO of Merck, leaves his manufacturing council, and he lashes out at him. What an unbelievably unintelligent move to make. Then you're burning your allies now. And what message does it send to the others? Well, it sent a very bad message. So then the CEO of Intel left, and the CEO of Under Armour left, and then he yelled at them. And then you know what happened today? The whole council is gone. They disbanded the manufacturing council and another economic council, because as I suggested on the show yesterday, yes, in fact, business leaders did meet behind the scenes. They had a call led by Stephen Schwarzman, who's actually one of Donald Trump's top allies. And they decided that they would all leave en masse. They would shut down the council. Yesterday on the show, I told you, I made that sound. That's the sound of power leaving the building. He's almost got no allies left. Look at what he's done. He's attacked Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader. He's attacked Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. He's attacked John McCain. He's attacked Susan Collins. He's attacked all of his allies. Well, who's going to defend you? And then his own loyalists, Scaramucci gone, Christie didn't get the position he wanted, Giuliani didn't, Newt Gingrich did. People who were loyal to him never got the things that he promised them. And then the people who were already there, the Sean Spicers and the Reince Priebuses, and he goes after even Jeff Sessions in public, trying to get rid of his own attorney general. He's got no allies left. The businessmen who wanted those tax cuts he promised them, they've left the building. Who does he have left? And now he's attacking Manafort. Manafort was his campaign chairman, and his house, Manafort's house, was raided by the federal government to get evidence. Then Trump goes to the National Enquirer and attacks Manafort. Very clear, brazen. This is the kind of leaks that Trump does consistently to the National Enquirer. And The only reason you attack Manafort is if he's already turned evidence against you. So there is that angle that is also imminent as the special counsel continues to investigating. And the part that people underestimate, though, and is his inability to mount a comeback. Because you think, well, he's the president. Presidents go up, presidents go down. Politicians go up and down, and their polls they fluctuate. No, no, no. He has misunderstood his mandate. First of all, his mandate was not to be the leader of the white nationalists. I know he thinks that, but his mandate was to just—it was very simple—to just not be Hillary Clinton, and he couldn't pull it off. It was not a high bar. But what does that mean? Not to be Hillary Clinton? Don't be the establishment. Don't do the deals that she was criticized for, taking money from people, etc. No, he surrounded himself with Wall Street guys, Goldman Sachs guys that he criticized Hillary Clinton for. He did all the things that he criticized Hillary Clinton for, and then more corruption, personal corruption, way worse than Clinton's, and then the white nationalist stuff. So he doesn't have people supporting him for a white nationalist movement. That is a tiny percentage of his base. And certainly a tiny percentage, even if you don't think it's a tiny percentage of his base, it's certainly a minuscule percentage of the overall people who voted for him, who mainly just didn't want the establishment in power. He's completely misunderstood it. And that's because he doesn't have a very high intellect. Boy, is that an understatement, probably the understatement of the year. So which leads us to this. In order to be able to come back from this kind of disaster, where you've accomplished nothing, you couldn't deliver on the promises that you gave to your supporters, like repealing the Affordable Care Act. You've gotten nothing done. It's complete incompetence. You said you had all these secret plans. It turns out you didn't have any secret plans. You surrounded yourself with a swamp, and now you're equivocating on neo-Nazis. Well, the only way to get out of that is through some brilliant strategy, and he ain't got that. There is no brilliant strategy. There is no three-dimensional chess. There's no two-dimensional chess. There's no chess at all. There's nothing going on there. He barely has two brain cells to rub together. So he's not going to do a comeback. He doesn't have it in him to do it. And the other thing that he will do going forward is he will not make it better. He will make it worse. He will dig that hole deeper and deeper and deeper. You know why? Because he can't help himself. Whenever he gets in trouble, he gets himself into further trouble because he's not smart enough to figure out when it's enough. Stop talking, stop tweeting. He doesn't know any better. He looks at it and thinks, I'm winning. I'm fantastic. Everybody else is a mess. He thought that press conference yesterday was a good idea. He'll do it again. I know you think, no, you can't back neo-Nazis again. That's insane. He'll do it again and again and again. Because he's not bright. He's a stupid, stupid, incompetent man. All right, so finally, look, in this country, we are not pro-Nazi. We defeated the Nazis. And yes, the Republicans are maddening. Yes, they back policies like voter ID laws, keeping Muslims out of the country, and let alone their attacks against immigrants. And those are despicable, but they're on a different plane than what Donald Trump has done here. From the moment all of us were born, almost all of us were taught that the Nazis were the bad guys. We defeated them. We're for freedom, and they're fascists. And if Donald Trump thinks that the majority of the country thinks the opposite, he is sorely mistaken, gravely mistaken. And on top of that, this man is deeply, deeply unstable. And now everybody sees it. The Republican leadership sees it. The business leaders see it. Everyone in power sees it. And yes, even his own supporters are beginning to see it. And we can't have this kind of instability as the president of the United States, the commander in chief. People have to take action, and they will. He's also given them this golden gift of having actually colluded with the Russians. So now we'll see how that investigation plays out, but all they need now is any kind of cover. If there is any type of indictment, any evidence linking Trump to the Russians, I think there's tremendous evidence, and I think it's financial, but you don't even need that anymore because he's lost all of his allies. All they need is an excuse to go, okay, that's it, we're done with him. Because the country can't take this kind of instability, and the country is not pro-Nazi. So I told you, his number one problem going in, and this is why I told you, you should never ever consider not only not voting for him, of course you shouldn't vote for him, but make sure that he doesn't get in office, because outside of his being a vitriolic, horrible human being, his number one problem is even deeper than that. Unbelievable, record-shattering incompetence. And now the entire country sees it, and we got to get him out before he causes any more damage to America, to all of our unity and community, and to the world. And they are going to do it. He's done. He's now just playing out the clock. It's just only a matter of time before Donald Trump resigns in disgrace. And I'm telling you right now, I guarantee you he will. All right, back on the Young Turks, Anna and Cenk with you guys. Eric Rooney says, prediction, Trump will leave the presidency with no major legislation passed in Congress. I hope to God that's true. And boy, that would really cement him as the most disastrous president by a landslide, including Nixon, including Bush. That is amazing, okay? Including Harding, including all of them. All right, Tyler Robles says, I don't think Kelly wants to be there, but he needs to be there to keep the man-child in chief, Trumpligans, away the nuclear football. I don't know, guys. I think tick-tock, they're all days away, hours away. I don't know, hours is a bit much from resigning. I mean, honorable people think, I don't want to. The next time he backs neo-Nazis, and he will, he can't help himself. That's when I think guys like Kelly go, oh, drop the mic. I got to get out of here, man. MM Photography says, Cenk, you're being too conservative. I don't think Trump will finish this year as president. I wouldn't doubt that at all. As we talked about in the post game yesterday, he might not finish the week. Finally, Brent Yamada says, you think some Republicans were fine with the Russia investigation so they'd have a safety valve if Trump went off the rails like this? No, Brent, I don't think that's how they went into it. I think that's where they are now, though. I think right now they're thinking, Russia investigation, not so bad. Hey, Mueller, what do you got for us? So, I mean, how much would they rather have Mike Pence than Donald Trump? Before it was 2-1, it's now 100-1. Mm-hmm. So they're like, let's go, Mueller. Let's go. Anybody else want to leak to him? Not just the Democrats. The Republicans are probably thinking that today, almost certainly. Okay, Anna, what do you got for us?
All right. The city of Baltimore has taken down a number of Confederate statues and a Confederate monument following the hate rally that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia. And they decided to take down these monuments in the middle of the night in an effort to do so in the most peaceful way possible. Now, keep in mind that lawmakers in the city had voted and decided to take these statues down. And so it wasn't something that they did secretly in the middle of the night. It was something that was agreed upon. Now, the removals began late Tuesday night, a day after the city council voted unanimously to take down the monuments immediately. The city, and this is a statement from the mayor, the city charter says, according to our city attorney, if the mayor wants to protect or feels like she needs to protect the public or keep her community safe, she has the right to keep her community safe. I felt the best way to remove the monuments was to remove them overnight. Now, keep in mind that they're not going to throw the monuments in the trash. They're just going to put them in a place that's a little less offensive, either a museum. There are other cities in the US that are considering doing something similar and placing the statues in a veterans cemetery, which
yes.
I think is kind of questionable, but anyway.
No. But to be fair, this has a couple of directions. So one is they're thinking of mainly putting it in a Confederate cemetery, which makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That seems like a good place for a Confederate statue. And then secondarily though, for the moment being, they're being temporarily stored at the Back River Wastewater Treatment Plant. And I don't think that's an accident. And so is the mayor rubbing it in their face a little bit? I think so, and God bless her heart.
All right, so let me give you some information on exactly what they took down. So they took down a monument dedicated to Roger B. Taney. And if you don't know anything about Roger B. Taney, let me give you some information. He wrote the US Supreme Court's majority opinion in the Dred Scott ruling. And Also in 1857, not also, more details on that. In 1857, that ruling found that slaves were not citizens of the United States and therefore were not protected under the US Constitution. He wrote that majority opinion. And so think about how incredibly insulting it is to live in Baltimore as a minority, as a black person, and see a monument dedicated to that individual on public land.
And you know, for the people who are think, well, look, man, we're the majority, and so we get to put up any monuments we like, etc. Well, in Baltimore, African Americans are the majority, and so they can take your Confederate monuments and put them in the sewer all they like. That's what they decided to do. So I guess that's a sad day for you. And where would you put a statue of a guy who said you weren't even human?
Yeah, seriously. Also, there was, of course, a statue of Robert E. Lee that was also taken down, and Thomas Stonewall Jackson.
Let's just for one second look. I know that in the South, there's these statues in all sorts of places. And yes, in some places where the majority thinks that the Confederacy was awesome, they like traitors to America, etc. I get it. In Baltimore, you've got a majority who believes that yes, African Americans are in fact humans and citizens, and it is an incredible insult to them to have these monuments in their city. Why the hell would they agree to that? So, and you have to understand the history of why the monuments were put up. They were not put up right after the Civil War. They were put up during the Jim Crow era to intimidate and terrorize African Americans, to say we're still in charge and you better know it. Well, okay, then you're not in charge anymore. So I'd just keep the monuments in the sewer if I was them.
All right, well, Baltimore isn't the only part of the US that is taking down these Confederate monuments and statues. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about Roy Cooper, the Democratic governor of North Carolina. He wrote an op-ed arguing that it makes all the sense in the world to get rid of these statues in his state. And then also, there are other lawmakers. So for instance, in Kentucky, they're considering taking similar measures. Mayor Jim Gray of Lexington, Kentucky, is also moving quickly to relocate two Confederate monuments from outside a historic former courthouse. And so white nationalists and neo-Nazis are planning on protesting there, and hopefully it doesn't turn out to be as violent as the situation in Charlottesville.
So more context. So in Maryland, Maryland was not in the South. They were a border state, and some folks in Maryland, and same with Kentucky. So, and Maryland and Kentucky both had people fighting on the in the Confederacy and the Union. So they don't have any particular allegiance to the Confederacy historically or as a matter of heritage. So there's no excuse on those grounds. But to the point of why the mayor in Baltimore did what she did, now in Kentucky, when they go to take those statues down, there's going to be a huge uproar. And the neo-Nazis and the Klan's gonna come again.
Yeah.
And probably the people who are protesting them will come again, and God knows what's gonna happen. And she's like, look, man, it's done. I'm the mayor. I got elected to take executive action. I took executive action. I don't think that there's gonna be too many people in the city crying over it. And we're done with it, okay? It's already finished. So what do you wanna do? You wanna bring them out of the wherever we're keeping them and put them back up? All right, well, the next mayor could try that, see how it turns out. But it is what it is, and we're done with it. And so, look, I think that we do have to go through a process, as I said yesterday, in the case of where they brought down the monument in North Carolina. And I don't want people taking the law into their own hands. But in this case, it is the mayor; that's her job. Okay. And so you can argue about whether the executive branch should do it or the legislature should do it. But there's 738 Confederate monuments that were erected not by accident, on purpose, to terrorize African Americans. None of them should stand.
All right, moving on to another component of bigotry and racism in America. Following Donald Trump's fiery press conference, where he further drew equivalencies between white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and those protesting them, of course, there was a number of lawmakers and members of the media and just US citizens who decided to criticize Donald Trump. And of course, the White House went into damage control. Now, one way that the White House does damage control is through their communications office. Their communications office releases essentially talking points to the GOP just to make sure that the messaging is consistent and very much supportive of the president. So let me give you what those talking points were, at least a couple of them, and then I'll tell you what the response was from the GOP. So one of the talking points was, the president was entirely correct. Both sides of the violence in Charlottesville acted inappropriately and bear some responsibility. So, I mean, he's just doubling down.
No, that's right? A tripling down, right?
Yeah, tripling down. That's a good point.
So, I mean, what do we tell you? We told you yesterday, he can't stop digging. So, you think he's going to find a way to get out of this mess? No, he's going to find a way to make this mess worse, and it can't get much worse. So,
well, I mean, don't underestimate him.
Okay, but for him to now put out marching orders for the rest of the Republicans, you are to continue to praise me and say that I am, quote, entirely correct, and it is very Trumpian, and to say, yes, both sides did it. He called people protesting bigotry and fascism, quote, very, very violent.
Right.
And
he said that, you know, some of those white nationalists and neo-Nazis protesting in favor of keeping those Confederate monuments up, some of them are very fine people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people are not going to, they're not going to follow your marching orders. By the way, he says he's entirely correct. Let me just note for the record. He said, well, they came charging in. The alt-left did, a made-up term, although some establishment Democrats like that term too. And they should take note of who else is using it. Okay, they came marching in without a permit. Now, are you going to be surprised to find out they did have a permit? He said, I like to figure out the facts before I talk.
Yeah,
no, you don't. Not only they had a permit, they had two permits. Not only did they have two permits, they were in a public park, which you don't need a permit for. So he was the exact opposite of entirely correct.
So let me give you some more of these talking points. He has been a voice for unity and calm, encouraging the country to rediscover the bonds of love and loyalty that brings us together as Americans.
Which one was that? That was Trump?
I mean, the guy.
These guys are mental, man.
Yeah, the guy who, you know, kicked off his presidential campaign by calling Mexicans murderers and rapists. Yeah, he's all about unifying people. And also dedicated the majority of his campaign about you know, building a wall. Anyway, he also, or at least the White House also shared this talking point. From cop killing and violence at political rallies to shooting at congressmen at a practice baseball game, extremists on the left have engaged in terrible acts of violence.
So let's pause there. Nazi member, he's a vowed Nazi, runs over 20 people and kills Heather Heyer on American ground. And this guy says, talking points for tomorrow is, remember, blame the violence on the left.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the guy who's entirely correct. I mean, think about how disgusting that is. Instead of saying, hey, it's a low bar to clear, let's say the Nazi who murdered someone was wrong. He says, no, don't talk about that. That's not in the talking points. There's no talking point about how, hey, the Nazis are wrong. No, instead, let's divert everyone's attention and attack the left who was there to protest him, who got murdered.
So this entire week, the theme that keeps playing over and over again in my mind is the fact that those on the left keep trying to play fair, right? And so I'll give you an example. When Kathy Griffin released that photo of a decapitated Trump-like head, mm-hmm. That was bloodied and everything, we criticized her, right? A lot of people on the left criticized her because it was violent imagery that didn't add anything substantive or beneficial to a very important conversation that we need to have in the country. And now, even though obviously I still think that that was a really bad move on her part, I feel like a clown for trying to play fair. Why am I trying to play fair? I mean, Trump made a big deal about, oh, can you believe what she's doing? It's so terrible. Oh, it's disgusting. And then you turn around and you make excuses for neo-Nazis and white nationalists after a 31-year-old woman was murdered by one of them. I mean, he has no shame. Again, we're the ones bringing a knife to a shootout. That's what's happening.
Yeah, well, I don't want to bring a knife. I don't want to bring a gun. I just want to bring ideas. And maybe that's naive. That's fine, okay? And look, I have faith in America that we are not pro-Nazi, that eventually the government, the authorities, the FBI, the Justice Department are going to do the right thing. And so far, the Justice Department, even led by Jeff Sessions, has done the right thing. And they say they're pursuing charges obviously against the people who did the violence, and they're not going after any of the peaceful protesters. So that's what I think, just taking the law into your own hands is a terrible idea. I believe in the moral high ground. And look, if the government flipped, that would be a different situation. And I know he's the president of the United States and he's trying to get them to flip. But so far, the government is holding, and they're not, you know, if they start, but look, I get what you're saying, Anna. There are very, very ominous signs. The story we did yesterday, where the Trump administration, including the Justice Department, asked for the names and addresses and phone numbers and credit card numbers and bank accounts to the 1.3 million people who'd signed up to protest Donald Trump. They wanted to get that from the internet. They said, oh, it's for the 200 people we think might have caused violence during inauguration, but you have their names, why don't you just get their information? No, I want every single protester against Trump.
That's right.
So there are places to draw a line, and this is a great place to draw the line. And as you're gonna point out, a lot of Republicans are.
Republicans are drawing the line. They did not really care much about this memo urging them to agree with the president and basically know their role. So let me give you their response. I want to start off with Representative Steve Scalise, who is in physical therapy right now after being shot. The talking points touched on him, right? And so how does Scalise feel about all this? Well, he released a statement saying, I was clear about this bigotry and violence. Graphic 13. I was clear about this bigotry and violence over the weekend, and I'll repeat it today. We must defeat white supremacy and all forms of hatred.
Now, Scalise in the past had gone and spoken to groups that were connected to white nationalists, and I'm being kind to him by leaving it at that. But at least he knows, for God's sake, when the whole press is watching, you don't say, maybe white supremacists are very fine people. No, you say you don't condone bigotry and hatred after they just committed a murder. So credit to Steve Scalise doing the right thing at a very important moment.
Paul Ryan also did the right thing, although he wasn't one of the lawmakers who called Trump out by name. There were members of the GOP who did that. Paul Ryan said, we must be clear, white supremacy is repulsive. The bigotry is counter to all this country stands for. There can be no moral ambiguity. We have David Perdue saying that the KKK, neo-Nazi, and white supremacist groups spew bigotry and racism. These groups and their ideals are the antithesis of American patriotism. John McCain had similar things to say and actually did call out the president. There's no moral equivalency between racists and Americans standing up to defy hate and bigotry. The president of the United States should say so. Barbara Comstock, similar sentiments. Mr. President, they were not very fine people on the neo-Nazi white supremacist side, only haters. Grateful the Department of Justice understands this.
These are all Republicans.
Yes.
But so, my favorite two are Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney.
All right, so let's go to them.
By the way, that's the only time I've ever said that sentence in my life.
Let's go to graphic 22. Mitch McConnell says the following. We all have a responsibility to stand against hate and violence wherever it raises its evil head. He also says the white supremacist, KKK, and neo-Nazi groups who brought hatred and violence to Charlottesville are now planning a rally in Lexington, Kentucky. Their messages of hate and bigotry are not welcome in Kentucky and should not be welcome anywhere in America. And finally, Mitt Romney says, no, not the same. Obviously touching on Trump's attempt to draw an equivalency between the right and the left. One side is racist, bigoted, Nazi. The other opposes racism and bigotry, morally different universes.
So that defense of the counter-protesters there by Mitt Romney was the best of the lot. And it was really comforting to see. Mm-hmm. And look, like I said in the beginning of today's show, this is a moment of truth. And a rare situation where it is fair to ask, which side are you on? And not a hard question, are you on the side of the neo-Nazis and the KKK, or are you on the side of all other Americans? So at least the Mitt Romneys and Mitch McConnells of the world are having enough courage to say, no, Mr. President, not on our watch. We don't agree, we're not gonna let you get away with it, and we're not gonna fall into standard Republican-Democrat lines, not on this. Mitch McConnell added, there are no good neo-Nazis, and those who espouse their views are not supporters of American ideals, and freedoms, because Donald Trump had said that there were very fine people on that side. So this is exactly what we need. It's easy for the Democrats to stand up in this case. It's people who oppose Trump, people who voted against Trump, people who protest Trump. Bless your hearts, it makes a huge difference. But that is relatively easier because you're on the opposite side. But for Republicans and Republican leaders, and by the way, the entire Bush family, Jeb Bush, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, all putting out statements and saying no. Arnold Schwarzenegger putting $100,000 into an anti-hate group to make sure that this is fought. So, you know, if you ever wondered, is there any line that Republicans won't cross? We found it. It is in some days a great day in America. We found the bottom of the barrel. And here is the rest, most of the rest of the Republican Party, not all of them, by the way, but most of them going, no, not on our watch. We're not going to go there. We're not going to support neo-Nazis and the KKK. The only one left on the other side appears to be Donald Trump. And anyone who's still supporting him on TV, or more importantly, in his administration, should immediately resign. And if you don't, we know where you stand. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Hamby and Cheese writes, since see alt-right, they weren't destroying your Confederate statues, just moving them to better places. Calm down, like the sewer. he did say that, by the way, I did. Public any meme, writes it. We did have Public Enemy in here yesterday. All these statements from the Republicans are nice, but it's time to impeach. Do something, GOP. And Nomikin writes in, Anna, you are the good guys because you play fair. I'm sorry it's so frustrating, but you guys give me hope. So great point. And then yesterday we did this question after a long conversation about whether it was right to pull down the North Carolina monument. And this is the closest poll we've ever had. 50.0% to 50.0%. Should they have pulled down the Confederate monument in California, in Northern California? If there's one in California, let's pull it down. Anyway, no, don't pull anything down. North Carolina, 1,245 votes saying yes, 1,246 votes saying no. TYTnetwork.com/monument. The polls have not closed. Cuyahoga County has still not come in. So keep on voting at tytnetwork.com/monument. Okay, what's next, Anna?
All right. Donald Trump has decided to disband his CEO advisory councils following a number of executives openly indicating that they do not want to be part of these councils anymore. Of course, their decision to not be part of the councils had to do with Trump's response or lack of adequate response to the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, Stephen A. Schwartzman, the chief executive of Blackstone Group and one of Mr. Trump's closest confidants in the business community, organized a conference call for members of the President's Strategic and Policy Forum. And guess what? The call indicated that a lot of people, a lot of CEOs, didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to proceed. They weren't happy with how things are going. They didn't want to be associated with Trump. Chief executives of some of the largest companies in the country debated how to proceed. And so I guess in an effort to prevent further embarrassment, Donald Trump just decided, yeah, maybe we should just disband these advisory councils.
Well, actually, it's a little worse than that. So there's two different groups, and I want to be clear about this. There's the manufacturing council. That's the one that was had all the people leaving. So Intel CEO, Under Armour CEO, and then today the Campbell Soup CEO and 3M CEO. They all left. They're all running from the building with their hair on fire, just like I said they would. And that's the Manufacturing Council. Now, the one that Anna referred to, Stephen Schwartzman, was running this Strategy and Policy Forum. Some had already left that. Elon Musk, Iger from Disney had left. So this was well before Charlottesville, because they had had enough on other insane stuff that Trump had done. So Schwartzman gets everybody together in a call, and I said, look, there's almost never any smoke-filled rooms. I think we might have talked about this a little bit in the post game yesterday. By the way, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and get all the post games. Anyway, as I was explaining there about why Trump is on borrowed time politically, I said, look, in this case, they might actually get together in a room. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they did. They got on a conference call. And they made the decision. Because each one of them, as Anna pointed out, was conflicted. They're like, well, do we embarrass him by leaving? But are you also going to leave? Or what should we do? And by the end of the call, they had made the decision to just completely disband the forum. They told Trump. Then Trump tweets today, rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council, the Strategy and Policy Forum, I'm ending both. Thank you all. No. They ended it. He didn't end it, at least for the Strategy and Policy Forum. And look, this is very important. So by the way, what an idiot. After all the CEOs who are backing you have left the building, he's like, well, I could have pressured them. I could have made them stay. No, by definition, you couldn't have. Right? Eight of them had already left. Now they're all gone. The reason is super important is because, let's get real, these guys do have more power than us. So it's not to say they're the only ones who have power. It's not to say that there's any, you know, Bilderberg Rothschild thing going on, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys deeply, deeply supportive, including the guy who put together the call. But if you've lost your big supporters on the right and corporate interests who are looking forward to giant tax cuts that you had promised them, what's left?
Yeah, he's so divisive that now people who, members of the GOP who supported him during his campaign and then continue to support him through some of the more deplorable moments of his presidency are now turning their backs on him. Okay, he keeps making enemies out of allies. And then also, I mean, remember, Donald Trump is supposed to be the guy who knows how to make great deals. And you know, the whole point of working with these manufacturing CEOs was to bring more jobs to the United States, right? Bring the jobs, create the jobs. I don't know how many deals he's gonna make when they refuse to even be part of his council because it's so incredibly embarrassing to be associated with a president that likes to draw equivalencies between white supremacists and those protesting them.
Yeah, so. And it's, look, it's a hard call for them because they backed him all the way, but it's also not a hard call. You know, backing a guy who creates a moral equivalency between Nazis and people protesting Nazis, especially right after a Nazi killed one of them, not that hard a call. So last thing about this that's very important is, look, in the school of keeping it real about politics, donors drive a lot of what happens in politics, and we talked about that all the time on the show. It's just because we've set up the wrong incentives in the system, and the system is set up wrong so that all they care about the guys are the ones financing their campaigns. And these are the guys who finance Republican campaigns. So not just Donald Trump, but for Republican senators and congressmen, these are the first guys they call. So when these guys give them a call and go, if Trump's in trouble, you don't have his back anymore. Don't worry about it, throw him under a bus. Sooner or later, Donald Trump's gonna find himself on the underside of a bus.
All right, I'm gonna skip ahead, okay? Skipping the next story, moving on to neo-Nazis crying. We'll get to this later. A self-proclaimed neo-Nazi was interviewed for a Vice documentary on the situation in Charlottesville, Virginia. And Christopher Cantwell, the neo-Nazi that I'm talking about, was very open and honest about who he is, what his identity is, and how much he favors using violence as a means to get his political agenda achieved. Take a look at a little snippet of the Vice documentary, and then I'm gonna give you an update on how Cantwell really is. Take a look.
We're here obeying the law. We're doing everything that we're supposed to do, trying to express opinions. And the criminals are over there getting their way. And that is a foundational problem with our society. And whatever you think of my opinions, that's going to be something that puts you in danger.
Yeah, and that is because this city is run by Jewish communists and criminal niggers. That's exactly what it is.
So you're the true
nonviolent
protesters.
I'm not even saying we're nonviolent. I'm saying that we did it aggressively. We did not initiate force against anybody. We're not nonviolent. We'll fucking kill these people if we have to.
Okay, so it's great documentary about Vice. We'll have the link down below in the description box for you guys. But I just want to reiterate these quotes, graphic 39 and 40, because you're about to watch a slightly different version of Christopher Cantwell now that his ass is on the line, okay? He said, of course we're capable. I'm carrying a pistol. I go to the gym all the time. I'm trying to make myself more capable of violence. That was in a different part of the documentary. And then what you just saw, he said, we're not nonviolent. We'll fucking kill these people if we have to.
Well, they definitely prove that. Now, all of a sudden, he was informed that there is a warrant out for his arrest. Now, that hasn't been confirmed. I'm not sure who told him that or where they got that information, but he is under the impression that there is a warrant out for his arrest. And so he posts a video in regard to that warrant on social media, and it is wonderful. Let's take a look at the first one.
I contacted the local police. I called the Charlottesville Police Department and I asked them, I said, I have been told that there's a warrant out for my arrest. And they said that they wouldn't confirm it, but that I could find this out if I, excuse me, that I could find this out if I wanted to go to a local magistrate or something like that. But with everything that's happening, I don't think it's wise for me to be, you know, going anywhere. There's a state of emergency. The National Guard is here. You know, so I don't think it's a good idea for me to go there, frankly. And I don't know what to do. I've emailed Stephen Tenney of the Keene Police Department. I have emailed Stephen Tenney of the Keene Police Department. He's one of the cops who came there. He's one of the cops who saved my ass when I had to pull my gun in Keene. And I emailed him and I said, I don't know what to do. I need guidance. I want to be peaceful. I want to be law-abiding. Okay, that was the whole entire point of this. And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful. You know, I know we talk a lot of shit on the internet, right? But like literally, Jason Kessler applied for a permit like months ago for this. Okay, when they yanked our permit, we went to the ACLU and we went to court and we won. And they just won't stop. You know, we have done everything in our power. We have used every peaceful and lawful means by which to redress our grievances. And our enemies just will not stop. What options do we have left? If somebody would like to inform me of that, then I will be grateful to you. I really will.
That was as delicious a video as I've ever seen. And the juxtaposition of those two videos is perfect. We'll come, man, we'll come. We're going to be violent. We're peaceful, law-abiding citizens. Okay, look, I'm still a lib, and I don't want people crying and sniveling like that.
Oh, I do. Okay. I absolutely 150% would love to see more of those types of videos. You know why? Because they terrorize. We talk a lot of shit on the internet. No, you guys terrorize people on the internet, okay? So you guys dox people that you disagree with. You threaten them with violence. You threaten women with rape. You threaten men with, you know, we're gonna show up and gun you down. This is the kind of stuff that they do on the internet on a regular basis. And then now all of a sudden there's a warrant out for your arrest, and oh my god, aww, are you afraid? Are you afraid of the cops? Are you worried that the cops are gonna come get you?
So it's when pathetic. Black folks are a little concerned about the cops because they get shot at a disproportional rate, you're like, oh, Black Lives Matter, who cares? I don't care that you're getting shot. I don't care about the police violence. When all of a sudden you just heard a whisper of maybe there's a warrant out for your arrest. What happened? What do you want? You want to start hashtag Nazi Lives Matter? Okay.
Yes, I know.
So no. Look, guys. Though the main point I want you to take away from this is there's stunning lack of empathy. You know, when it happens to me, it's the most important thing in the world, and I'm scared. And how dare people, you know, begin to impinge on my so-called rights? You said you'd kill people. You don't have a right to kill people. You have a right to rally, yes, okay, no question about that. And that's why the ACLU supported you, and that's why the government let you rally. So they love being victims. And boy, that sniveling right there, that was the sound of the most special snowflake melting.
Let's go to video 7, because I did right. Appreciate that sniffling. Okay. But I really do want to go to the next video because he specifically addresses his fear that police will approach him violently. Take a look.
If law enforcement wants me to turn myself in or they want to know my location, all they have to do is call that number, okay? And if we can set up a means of communication where I can verify that you're the police, I will go to the police station or wherever you tell me to go, or if I can confirm that you are in fact law enforcement, I will give you my location and I will let you come and get me, okay? I'm armed. I do not want violence with you. All right? I'm terrified. I'm afraid you're going to kill me. I really am. All right? So just let's do this however we need to do it, you know. If I got to go to jail today, you know, it won't be the fucking first time. All right. I don't want to. I don't think I should. I think I honestly believe that I've been law abiding and I've been engaged in violence. I have. There's no question about it. And I've done nothing to hide that. But it was done in defense of myself and others. I do not fucking fight with people. You would have heard about it by now, right? If I was a violent guy, you would have heard about it by now. Everybody in their mother wants to fucking ruin my life, okay? And if I wanted violence, it's not a difficult thing for a guy like me to find, okay?
He contradicts himself several times in the same video. It's amazing.
No wonder they support Trump, right? He's like, I've done violence. If I'd done violence, you'd have heard about it. Yeah, I did. I heard it from you just a minute ago. Anyway, what was that they were saying about beta males? I'm terrified. Okay.
That was a cucktastrophe.
Okay, look, it's hard not to laugh. It's hard not to laugh. But guys, I don't want anybody going through that. I don't want the left going through that. I don't want the right going through that. That's why you shouldn't have said, we're not nonviolent. We'll fucking kill these people if we have to. That was the original problem. Your crying is amusing, but not the problem. The problem was that you were threatening violence on other people. And when you terrified other people, you loved it. And you took great pride in, oh, I get to terrify you. The minute it's turned around on you a tiny bit, by the way, the left didn't do it to you. Your political opponents didn't do it to you, whoever you think they are. It was just the cops saying, hey, if you're threatening to kill people, maybe we should have a conversation with you. Then that little thing triggered you to, I am terrified. Okay, then maybe you should have a tiny bit of empathy for other people. But right, of course, that's their number one problem.
And one final thing. Look, he's terrified that the cops will approach him in a violent manner. He mentioned that in the video. Really? So you agree with Black Lives Matter? You know, the people that are protesting the number of innocent, unarmed black people who have been shot and killed by cops? Do you agree with their message finally? Or are you unable to empathize with what they go through?
So for him to say, I am armed,
yeah,
and he has on tape threatened to kill people. And so when the cops come, well, they're going to take precautions, right? They're going to be careful. But every time they took precautions before and they were careful, even with unarmed people, you loved it. You loved it. You kept talking about, oh my, yes, that's right. Oh, Black Lives Matter. Who cares? Hey, they should have listened to the cops. Oh, Chris, you should have listened to the cops. So, by the way, I hope nothing comes of it. I hope the police go and talk to him calmly, because we believe in the police actually protecting all of the community, unlike these guys.
Yep. All right, we have to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, a story that you don't want to miss. Trump's lawyer finds a hilarious way of claiming he's not a racist. So good.
All right, back on the Young Turks. Jeremy Varner writes, and I'm a pretty sympathetic dude. If someone cries and gets upset, I'm usually right there with them. I can't stop laughing this time. Eric says he's afraid the cops are going to kill him. He knows he's white, right?
Yeah, by the way, if you want, and I know people get really touchy about this phrase, but this is what white privilege is, okay? White privilege is being able to show up to a rally, boastful about how heavily armed you are, and not worry about cops shooting you point blank, yeah, right?
If he put aside blacks for a second. If he was Muslim and he showed up at a rally and said, oh, I'll kill people and I have a gun. You think they just like walk, let them walk around willy nilly? Then the cops will get you something to be afraid of. He just has no idea how lucky he is in that sense. Anyway, AJ Beamish says, know why the alt-right supports Trump? They all whine at the same frequency. And by the way, he put out his phone number in that video. He's such a dumbass. But we cut the phone number out because we don't want, I don't want anybody calling him. I don't want anybody to do any have anything to do with that guy. So anyway. So member shout outs today are William Coxon, Alexandria Tarver. Thank you for being members, guys. And if you missed any part of that show, including that the crying Nazi, if you're a member, you could watch it anytime you want ad-free. TYTnetwork.com/join. Okay, Anna, what's next?
All right. Usually when it comes to Americans who air their grievances about police, it's people in minority groups, Black Lives Matter, for instance. However, interestingly enough, all of a sudden, white nationalists and neo-Nazis who took part in the hate rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, are saying, we really don't like the way cops treated us. We're surprised that cops acted this way. And so now there are all sorts of complaints about how the cops didn't do enough to protect them, to look out for them, to defend them. Let me give you a couple examples. Richard Spencer was one of those people who criticized the way cops behaved during the hate rally. He says, I have never felt like the government or police were against me. There has never been a situation in my life when I felt this way, when I felt this way.
So. But Richard, that's exactly what white privilege is. That's what we're trying to explain to you. And I've said this 1,000 times on the show. White privilege doesn't mean that if you're born a white kid in Nebraska, you're rich and famous. Of course not. Nobody thinks that, right? It's just that you have a privilege you don't even realize you have, which is that some people just have it worse than you. So there are assumptions made about African Americans, and that's borne out by the statistics. I'll give you the standard one. Whites and blacks smoke pot at the same rate, but blacks get arrested at 4 times the rate. So when you don't get arrested for smoking marijuana, you don't know that you have that privilege. But you don't know that that blacks are 4 times more likely to get arrested for doing the same exact thing. So here's Richard Spencer, a white nationalist, racist Nazi. And saying like, well, the cops have been on my side the whole time.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder why, Richard, I can't quite tell. And you're the guy who denies that there is such a thing as white privilege. You just basically admitted it.
So let me give you the rest of his statement. He says that after what happened in Charlottesville, this has changed everything. I thought that the police would uphold constitutional law no matter what. But they do uphold constitutional law. What is he even talking about? Okay, you guys were able to show up to Charlottesville, practice your First Amendment right, and you did what you did. And then when things got violent, cops did what they're supposed to do, get people out of there to make sure that no one gets killed. But someone did get killed, right? Because of people on your side, Richard Spencer.
So that's that was actually Jason Kessler, other rally organizer in Charlottesville. And so think about the white privilege there for a second. Their side had an avowed Nazi. And I'm not saying that Kessler made him do it or Spencer told him to do it, but it was somebody from their group that, and there's pictures of him standing right next to everybody else in the goofy like shields and batons and stuff, went and killed somebody and ran 19 other people over. Now even the Justice Department calls him a domestic terrorist. And they say, and then the cops busted up the rally just because we murdered someone. And again, you know, you want to say, no, it's not fair to say we. Someone on his side murders someone and ran 19 people over. Just because we had the terrorists on our side, then the cops want to stop our rally where we were killing people? Huh, this has never happened before. Usually the cops help us. That's kind of what the point the other side was making.
Pat Dickinson says, I blame the rank and file cops for being cowards who obey unlawful orders, but the orders came from higher up. Okay, so you think cops are cowards now? What happened to thinking that cops are always right, that every black, unarmed black person and unarmed black kid who gets shot and killed is a bad person, a thug? Like all of a sudden, oh, you guys are the victims. And again, they love to make themselves the victims over and over again, while they point the fingers at minorities who actually are victimized and blame them for playing victim.
But what happened to Blue Lives Matter? Before you were all about Blue Lives Matter, the minute they break up your rally after someone was murdered, you're like, oh, look, the cops, you know what outrageous things that cops are doing. Well, to be fair to them, they said they didn't know they were going to be part of a unpopular minority group. Oh, And now they come to find out that sometimes the government treats minorities a little different than they treat other folks. And now that you feel you're part of a minority group and an aggrieved Nazi alt-right white nationalist part, are you going to be okay, Special Snowflake?
This is another layer to what we talk about when they worry about the white race is getting overtaken. There's going to be too many Latinos. Pretty soon they're going to be the largest group in the country. Yeah. All this stuff. Heard it for a long time now about how the numbers are bearing that out. Because they're worried if they're actually a minority group, they think everyone else will treat their majority value the way they always have. Mm-hmm. By expecting the cops to do things for them, stomp their boot on the neck of anyone else and destroying their lives, because that's the way they think. It's like, oh my God, we gotta make sure we stay here where we are at the top so that no one else gets on us the way we get on everyone else. Everyone else doesn't think the way you do. So like, it's a one track mind. It's not seeing any other part of the world except from your own lens.
By the way, they bring up the Constitution all the time, right? Oh, these cops, they're not upholding constitutional rights. I would like them to sit down for just 10 minutes and read the Constitution. Just read it for the first time in your life. Read the Constitution. That doesn't mean you read one amendment, okay? Your favorite amendment, which is of course the Second Amendment. I actually want them to read the First Amendment. I want them to understand what the Constitution says, because our Constitution supports the freedom of religion. And you guys are marching with neo-Nazis who are against Jewish people, terrorizing people who are praying 200 feet away at a synagogue, threatening them, okay? I mean, just the fact that they claim that they care about the Constitution, you don't care about the Constitution. You don't understand the Constitution. You've never even learned about the Constitution. You just say that because you pretend as though you're some sort of law-abiding citizen who's trying to protect American values. You don't care about American values because if you did, you wouldn't be a hateful piece of shit that you are, okay?
So they chanted Nazi chants, blood and soil. They said, they chanted, the Jews will not replace us. By a local synagogue, they chanted Sieg Heil. Now, that's not to say that every person in the entire rally did all those things, but they're right next to those guys. They're the ones who came in with the torches like a Klan rally. This is not a hard question. You knew exactly what the point of that rally was.
Yeah.
And so, And then they complain, well, how come the cops didn't support us? We had a permit and we did everything right, and the cops betrayed us. And but they went and asked the cops. They're like, no, we had everything planned out with these guys. We were gonna let them march. We did let them march, but they were supposed to come from the back of the park, and they decided they weren't gonna follow the rules. And then they didn't come from the back of the park. And they came from somewhere else, which made it so much harder for the cops to do their job and maintain order. Now, what do they say to blacks every time there's any kind of an unarmed black guy shot or whatever? Why didn't you just listen to the cops? Just follow their orders and you wouldn't have had any problems. Here, it's unequivocal. The police say we gave them very clear directions. We worked it out ahead of time and they did not listen to those directions. And finally, out of all these wonderful quotes, my favorite is also from Pax Dickinson's, when he said, this was a, quote, conspiracy to deny civil rights.
You guys are such clowns. It's unbelievable how gigantic of clowns they are. Like,
we mentioned that they, all their anti-Semitic rants, but these guys have been anti-Muslim from day one. So on the, you never read the Constitution, you never cared about the First Amendment, freedom of religion, and then we don't establish a religion in America because you don't believe in the core ideas of America. America is not fascist, it's for freedom and liberty and equality for all. You should read the document. And then you don't care about the civil rights of anyone else who from a different religion. You don't care about it when it comes to black people. You certainly don't care about it when it comes to gay people. But when Nazi civil rights are touched, he's like, oh, my rights as a white supremacist have been trampled upon.
It's unbelievable.
Man, that's not a snowflake, that's a blizzard.
All right, one final first hour story that I love. All right. Donald Trump's longtime lawyer, Michael Cohen, decided to make the case that he is not racist, okay? In fact, he knows a lot of minorities, a lot of black people specifically, and he's taken a lot of pictures with them. And so in an effort to defend himself against anyone who might think he's racist for his association to Donald Trump, he tweeted the following. Now, it is a collage of himself with a number of black people, and it says,
oh, well, that settles it.
Yeah. As the son of a Holocaust survivor, I have no tolerance for racism. Just because I support the president of the United States doesn't make me a racist, okay? Some of the pictures that he's been in included black people. So there you go. By the way, look, I don't know if he was getting like this wave of hatred, right? I'm sure on Twitter he did. I mean, everyone gets a wave of hatred on Twitter, regardless of what they do. But like, here's the reality, like no one was talking about you, bro. No one of import was talking about you. So just don't say anything, don't release that tweet because it makes you look ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that like you're in a room with a bunch of people and somebody raises their hand and goes, I'm not racist. You're like, okay, where did that come from?
Yeah.
So no, I know where it came from though. So Michael Cohen, since he's the lawyer for Donald Trump, I'm sure got a lot of heat from the people he knows because now Trump is not just on the side of white supremacists and the alt-right and the white nationalists and all those guys, but now neo-Nazis are in the mix. And so they're going to Michael Cohen and going, really? Mm-hmm. You're still standing by Trump when he said that there was a moral equivalency between the Nazis and the people protesting Nazis? Really, Michael? So then I'm sure he, you know, hey, my dad with the Holocaust, okay, I'm sure that's true. And obviously, it's horrific, and I'm sure he's not anti-Semitic. That would be super weird, right? So he gets this, so that's the first part. Well, I can't be anti-Semitic, mm-hmm. Okay, check. Then he wants to go on because then people, I'm sure that in the conversations with him, not on Twitter, mm-hmm. people he knows were like,
okay. Talk to people in real life, okay? And don't share a montage or a collage of you with black people as evidence. Look.
But just to finish the thought though, I'm sure that people said to him, okay, Michael, I get it, you're not anti-Semitic. Okay? That's you're Jewish, etc., right? But he's also racist, Michael, so you're just gonna let him get away with that? That's why he goes, oh no, I'm not, but he might be, but I'm not. Do you know how many black people I've walked next to in my life? This reminds me of the guy who said in a story we did a couple years ago, I'm not racist, I've even let black people use my bathroom. So put in your picture with notorious scam artist Don King, who'll do anything for a buck, does not make you a non-racist. Put in your picture next to Omarosa.
I know.
Come on, right?
It's like you haven't heard the whole thing this whole time. Like that's if you've been around the world, if you've been anywhere near, he's an attorney. You mentioned it earlier, you'd think he'd have to be somewhat intelligent. But he's never heard people say, oh, you're gonna tout all your black friends? He said, I didn't say it, I posted the pictures, it's real. So he misses that. I don't care if you actually do have black friends. You putting that out there is a no-go. But anyway, just to make sure, I want you guys, I wanna give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, first of all, okay? He's trying to put something out there. I had a similar thing happen to me yesterday. Let's watch tape of what I said yesterday.
I'm like, as soon as you go to the door of that man and his dog, it'll be yapping, yapping, yapping.
Oh,
and then
come on.
When you take a step, it'll dart back away, and then you take a step back, and it'll yap, 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 yap again. And you're like, well, someone shut this dog the fuck up. Maybe pick the dog up like you did on Judge Judy, so I don't have to watch this dog yap at my feet anymore and then run away.
I'm just so relieved that JR took the title of dog hater back from me.
Yeah, you did.
I'm just upset that you guys continue to point me as a dog hater. So I tweeted this picture earlier about many instances I've had of hanging out with some of my best friends. Make sure you guys realize.
Oh my God.
You can't judge a book by its cover or by one thing that I say. These pictures will last forever.
Some of his best photoshopped images included dogs.
Each one of those dogs I own throughout the years.
My favorite one is the one at the top left-hand side. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you look lovingly at that dog.
I have a kennel. It's beautiful.
If you gotta post pictures of yourselves with black folks up on Twitter, you might be a racist. All right.
Anyway. All right, that does it for hour one. Brett's coming in to lead hour two, and it's gonna be awesome. Come right back.